This is Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. And you can find out more. Check out my Substack page, Musing from Between the Lines, and the website all, book-books.com. So, the next chapter in the Patricia Seed book, Ceremonies of Possession, is about 50 pages. So, that's on pause. I will note that so far, a few pages into it, the what seems in essence is that the Portuguese navigational skills, while they occasionally planted objects such as stone pillars to indicate the extent of their discoveries, their ability to establish the latitude of a new place provided the central proof of their discovery. So this technology of the latitude, and I think they use an astrolabe, some kind of tool. The Portuguese termed their methods of finding new lands discovery. The systematic process by which new lands and new peoples were found and discovery constituted the core of their claims to authority overseas. So that's a whole nother discussion, this whole idea of discovery when people's already there. But the navigational skills, which it also mentions came and went, that advantage they had for doing that, and then once that disappeared, that it no longer came back. So I presume that's why do not hear much about Portuguese influence in the U.S. And some of that was fueled, not necessarily the colonization mentality, but the traditions of Islamic and Hebrew mathematics and astronomy, Jewish astronomers and mathematicians. So I personally found that interesting to learn. And again, there's a quote, the whole new thing, which, you know, I've noticed that for decades, it's new and improved advertising that goes back. This is Pedro Nunes in 1537. New islands, new lands, new seas, new peoples, and what is more, a new sky and new stars. That's the chapter title, A New Sky and New Stars. But it's just, it is a edifice, it is a delusional perception of reality, it's a false veneer. And that is the wool and that has been pulled over people's eyes. And that is much of why I find this book so fascinating, is because it accentuates that literal wool over the eyes that people walk around. I mean, I grew up in New York City. It took me however long it took me to realize these are Lenape lands. So the recognition helps, but for now, it's New York. And that's what the masses of people think of it as. You know, people talk about psyops and conspiracy theories. That's one of the biggest psyops ever. This whole New World thing. That's my disagreement with a lot of the Whitman files. Walt Whitman was touting the New World. He was all for, you know, his song of myself, every atom belonging is me, but as good belongs to you. Well, that sounds beautiful, and in essence, it's true, but why was he touting the New World when the natives were already here? It just is like, when you break it down that way, to me, it's a mind-boggling misperception of reality. So I just, like a woodpecker in springtime, I just keep hammering on that topic because, perhaps it gets through to some people and shifts the balance. So instead of that, part of when I read is just like I get into a book and then all of a sudden my attention sort of unknowingly how just shifts. So I wanted to read some highlights of several other books I'm in the midst of. One is taught by Todd Miller, Empire of Borders, which is fabulously written, and the information both. This is from 2019. It's just astounding the amount of what goes on with the border control around the world that the U.S. Empire has done, and it seems like that was one of the plans from the as a result of the 9/11 and this whole mass of the global war of terror and surveillance system. It's just, this book is astounding, but it's also superbly well written, one of the best books I've read in a while. but I'm only about halfway through that. But I wanted to read this one page on the Philippines, which I did not know. The Philippines was a major center after the military aspect of it because of its location. Then it became the blueprint area for the surveillance system. And here's one quote. I'm going to read two quotes here. One is, the Philippines was a critical part of what the U.S. described in the Asia-Pacific Maritime Security Strategy, achieving U.S. national security objectives in a changing environment. The first sentences of that document read, quote, "The United States has enduring economic and security interests in the Asia-Pacific region." Why, I ask? And because the region stretching from the Indian Ocean through the South and East China Seas and out to the Pacific Ocean is primarily water. That just reads hilariously ridiculous. Because the region is primarily water, we place a premium on maintaining peace and security. End quote. Things hadn't changed much from the proclamations of Senator Beveridge in 1898 or President McKinley's insistence that God had commanded the United States to civilize, in quotes, the island nation. So there, that's basically the exact follow-up to the ceremonies of domination starting from around 1492. And then on the next page, the end of that chapter, this bit, I want to read this last couple of paragraphs because this is the essence of virtually every book I've read. A nonfiction book about what's going on, and it just seems to always come back to the same thing. So if I had, this is a page I would read to sum up like virtually all the nonsense. So there's this guy named George Kennan. Anyway, I'll read this. Noticeably absent from Kennan's discourse were the lofty, and this is back in 1948, U.S. strategist George Kennan speaking to the audience at the National War College. Anyway, this says, noticeably absent from Kennan's discourse were the lofty, blatantly racist declarations of manifest destiny. Indeed, they were replaced by a more pragmatic and concise expression of empire building. Quote, "We have to accept a certain unchallengeable antagonism between him that has and him that has not in this world," he said. As I mentioned in the introduction, during a conference with the CIA in October 1949, Kennan's words expressed tacitly acknowledged, and here's what I highlighted, the empire's underlying fear that the world's poorer countries would develop an alternative political and economic system, that the poor would challenge the status quo. Right there, that is to me the essence of what I read over and over and over and over and over again in any geopolitical discussion. The empire's underlying fear that the world's poorer countries would develop an alternative political and economic system, that the poor would challenge the status quo. And what does an economic system rely on? That relies on the resources of Mother Earth. But as Chief Arvo Looking Horse says, Mother Earth is a source, not a resource. And on with the page here. But by the time he finished his term as Director of Policy Planning in 1949, Hunt writes, Kennan had, quote, introduced a bold new vision in which U.S. officials secured the dominant position of the United States in the world, shaping the main contours of global order, end quote. This marked a major turning point in U.S. history. What Kennan promoted was what was called a center-periphery model of world organization, featuring what sociologist R.D. McKenzie described in 1927 as a, quote, dominant center and subordinate integrated parts, end quote. Here is the blueprint of today's U.S. globalized border apparatus. Its vast international scope of subordinate parts have emerged, wedging hardened and harsh lines of division between the global North and global South. Leaders talk of border security as if it were as natural and timeless as a mountain or river. It is not. the hardened, militarized borders insisted upon by politicians are a recent phenomenon, as are political boundaries between nation-states, as are nation-states themselves. True, if you count those first days of the development of the modern surveillance apparatus after the U.S. seized the Philippines, the Raytheon National Coast Watch Center, with its fixed and mobile command units, its common operational pictures, its tactical radios, maritime radar, camera systems, and ground sensors, has become more than 100 years in the making. Kennan and his preoccupation about the have-nots from the embittered world would be proud. So that's another highlight in this chapter, the Raytheon, one of the major weapons manufacturers. They're in on this whole control freak stuff too. So that's, like I said, that's my highlight so far in this book. There's a lot of good bad quotes, but that's one of the high gists. And another book I just started by Peter D'Errico, Federal Anti-Indian Law, The Legal Entrapment of Indigenous Peoples. And this ties into the same thing, how the law system is set up, not as it might be called federal Indian law, but it's actually federal anti-Indian law. The system is rigged against the indigenous peoples, which again ties back to the Patricia Seed book and to the doctrine of Christian discovery and domination. So as they say, it's all connected. And then one more book that is loosely connected, The Heart's Code by Paul Pearsall, PhD. Tapping the Wisdom and Power of Our Heart Energy. And another one I'm about halfway through. And I'll find a couple of bits here. He describes the heart's reactivity to the lack of gentle, caring connection. Another cardiologist, Dean Ornish, has shown that significant changes in lifestyle, including a less angry, hostile interaction with others, can actually reverse heart disease and unclog arteries without surgery. He writes, "I am becoming increasingly convinced that heart disease is a metaphor as well as an anatomical illness. In poetry, art, and literature, the heart is often portrayed as the organ most affected by our emotions, and I think there is some truth to that." So I read that and I'm like, I took note, since he mentions lack of gentle, caring connection. So emphasize gentle, caring connection, de-emphasize angry, hostile interaction. And another amazing aspect of this book is that it goes into a lot of examples of people who had heart transplants, and then they took on the characteristics of the person from whom they got the heart. So all of a sudden they were listening to different kind of music, or they found themselves enjoying a different kind of food. So this speaks to what seems proving, but I guess it's still theory, but it's sort of that intelligence of the heart that is beyond, how does that happen? How does that intelligence of the heart system then have somebody shifting their preferences and behavioral patterns and emotional reactions and this and that? One rather humorous one was a guy who describes his wife getting the heart of a prostitute who was killed, and then he got the heart and he says his wife had never been that much into sex. And all of a sudden, so that was quite interesting, amusing one to read about. And just to tie it all up, as I like to do, show how it's all interconnected as something that I have a fondness for. As much as I love books, and these books are quite informative, and then the Connecting with the Heart's Code book, this is a quote from Burgil Killstraight, who was in Oglala Lakota, and I put this in my recent book, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest, to show the, which goes a lot into how books have been used to manipulate people, And so this is the quote: they cut you off from your heart, stick you in your head, and manipulate you out of a book. So that's part of the formula, is through the book knowledge, through the information, is to manipulate you. So why then do I read books? Well, because I read books, because I learn stuff that like this that contradicts. To me, it contradicts the manipulation that the books, ironically, that the books are trying to convince you of. And in the modern sense, I would say now the book is the includes the media and online propaganda, and whatever format it comes in, it is English. It's information letter based. Who's controlling the information and the alphabet and such like? So may you have many gentle and caring experiences, and I wish you well. And thanks for listening.